This is Sam Swartz and Rachel Fields with your local news, coming to you live from the WORT studios in beautiful and slightly stormy downtown Madison.
As part of a lawsuit settlement, two Republican lawyers, Kenneth Chesbrough and Jim Troupas, have released hundreds of documents detailing their involvement in the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 presidential election in Wisconsin. The documents detail how the lawyers structured their strategy in Wisconsin using fake electors and then expanded out into other swing states to undermine the election results, reports the Associated Press. The two lawyers joined the 10 fake electors in settling their civil lawsuits without admitting wrongdoing or liability, although there is a possibility that criminal charges could be brought against them. Other states, including Michigan and Nevada, have brought charges against fake electors, but so far the Wisconsin Attorney General has declined to do so. There is also the possibility that federal charges could be brought.
First Lady Jill Biden visited Wisconsin over the weekend, delivering a speech in Waukesha focused on increasing the turnout among women voters. Dr. Biden spoke on issues around reproductive rights, including the prospect of a national ban on abortion if Trump is elected, reports the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Waukesha has been a stronghold for the Republican Party in the state, but recent polling numbers show that the county's political makeup may be changing, and Democrats have been campaigning heavily in the area. Later this week, Vice President Kamala Harris will visit the Madison area to speak on union jobs and apprenticeship programs.
Wisconsin State Senator Andre Jacques announced his intention to run for Wisconsin's 8th congressional seat to represent the Green Bay area, following the decision by Mike Gallagher to not run for re-election, reports the Associated Press. Gallagher made the announcement shortly after there was significant blowback from his party when he was one of only a few Republicans in the House to vote against impeaching Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Jacques joins State Senator Roger Roth in the primary for the seat in what is likely to be a safe Republican district.
Governor Tony Evers announced last Friday that his Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr would be stepping down from his position in the administration. The move comes as the state's prison system struggles with overcrowding, personnel shortages, and allegations of inhumane conditions, reports the Associated Press. Several state prisons have been under persistent lockdowns to deal with those problems, and inmates have filed class action lawsuits alleging that the conditions have amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. The departure makes for another vacancy in the Evers administration. In the past, Evers has struggled to find candidates that can pass the confirmation process in the Republican-controlled state Senate, with 13 failed confirmation attempts during his tenure.
Governor Evers signed a new law into effect today that would expand the state's tax credit for children and dependents, increasing the credit to $10,000 for one child or dependent and $20,000 for two or more. The bipartisan law will decrease the state's tax revenue by about $73 million and will save the typical eligible filer about $650, reports the Wisconsin State Journal. The governor and the legislature have gone back and forth on funding levels for childcare in the state, with Republicans stripping a $340 million spending proposal from the governor's budget last summer. On Friday, the governor vetoed three other spending bills put forth by Republicans, including a push to lower taxes on high-income earners.
The Madison Public Library enters into the final phase of its search for a new director, with finalist interviews and a public meet-and-greet event happening over the next week, reports the Wisconsin State Journal. The candidate search began after former director Greg Mickles announced his retirement last August and left the position in February after serving as director for 11 years. The three finalists are a library division chief from Arlington, Virginia, an assistant director from Suffolk, Virginia, and the digital services and marketing manager for the Madison Library System. Community members interested in meeting the candidates and discussing the future of the library system are invited to the meet and greet at 9:30 a.m. at the Goodman South Madison Library this upcoming Saturday.
And those were your local news headlines. We turn now to two special guests joining us this evening. Helena White and Faye Parks are in the studio, and they want to tell you a little something about WORT and our pledge drive.
This is Faye Parks. I'm the news producer on this show, and I'm here with
Helena White.
And we're here to talk about our semi-winter pledge drive. I wouldn't really say it's fully winter, but it says it on the calendar.
It does. It says it on the calendar, so we'll go with that. Yeah, this is the time for you to give us a call at 608-256-2001. Let us know how much you appreciate local news. I mean, where else on the radio dial do you get this level of information about what's happening right here in your own community?
Yeah, coming up right after this break, we've got a couple of really great local stories that really I haven't heard a lot of other outlets talking about. So we've got this vigil that happened this weekend, as well as a reading for the Leopold Week. Those are both things that are really fascinating, a lot of in-depth detail on those that you're just not really getting anywhere else.
Initially, local news was just a half an hour show from, I think it went from, was it 5:30 to 6? Or 6:30 to 7, and then a few years ago we got feedback from you, our listeners, who said, you know, we really want more, we want to hear more local news, so we changed it to a 1 hour show, which is quite a lot of information to provide to you guys. But we have breaking news, we have feature stories, we have breaking reports, we have the various different news and feature information. So if you appreciate the local news that comes to you 4 days a week here, give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org and pledge online.
Yes, Ken is outside this room waiting for you to call in. He's so excited to hear from you, hear your favorite shows, and then bring some good news to us.
Because I'd really like to see somebody who's never donated before. Maybe you out there are someone who's listened to WORT, maybe for a short time, maybe for a long time, and you realize, yeah, you know what? It's true. I really do like this radio station. I like the public affairs programming. I like the things I hear at noon. I like the 8 o'clock buzz. I do listen to the local news. I do listen to Amy Goodman. I do appreciate the BBC News headlines. And I'm kind of a news junkie, and it's great to be able to have this information at my fingertips. So give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org and make your first time pledge to WORT. Join the WORT family. You're going to feel really, really good when you do that. So 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
Early last month, students at an Oklahoma high school jumped one of their classmates, Nex Benedict, in a bathroom. Benedict, an indigenous, non-binary 16-year-old, died the next day. Their cause of death has yet to be determined, reports CNN, but the U.S. Department of Education has opened an investigation to determine if the school district responded appropriately to the alleged harassment. Benedict's tragic death inspired a wave of vigils across the nation, including here in Madison. Last Friday, folks with Outreach LGBTQ+ Community Center and Red Clover Tattoo Collective invited Madisonians to gather at Burroughs Park at 6:30 p.m. At least 100 people of all ages were in attendance to mourn Benedict's death and show solidarity. Christina Kivlin is a contributor on her turn, WORT's 30-minute feminist news show airing on Sundays at 11 a.m. Christina was at the vigil and heard from folks on the ground. She and WORT news producer Faye Parks have some insights from those interviews.
I think it's really important to be here because it's not fair for other people to kill theys just because they want to be a they. And I think it's very unfair that they killed them at the age of 16. That's a very young age to die.
I'm Gabriel Laredo. I work at Outreach as a transgender advocate. I guess what that means is I help the trans community in any way that they might need me, either that be legal or healthcare or housing advocacy or stuff like this. This vigil is for Nex Benedict, who was a two-spirit indigenous youth who was jumped in a bathroom and later died in a hospital. It's important because Nex deserved to grow up. All of our youth deserve to grow up. They deserve long, long lives.
Well, I want to see other people like me in the trans community. And I think it's important for the trans people to get together and meet each other so they can feel safe around other trans people.
So my name is Tara Stangler, and I am the Harm Reduction Services Director at Outreach. We were getting emails at Outreach of, hey, do you know if anybody's organizing anything? I was getting messages from people like, hey, have you heard about anything in Madison? And so it was just really important to, like, hear that and take heed and say, okay, it seems like it's something that people really want, and there's not a lot of spoons left for a lot of folks. I was working with some other organizations in the area that work with queer youth, and I had kind of asked, like, what is it that they want? What is it that they need? And, you know, a lot of us, when we were waiting for that answer, were like, maybe it'll be like a specific craft. Maybe it'll be like a specific food. Maybe it'll be a song. And the most heart-shattering response I've probably will ever get in my life was that they wanted queer elders. They wanted to see people that were older and prove that, you know, people could age past where they're at now and they could live happy and full lives. I think that, like, as a whole, Madison could use more events like this, where it's, we're not marching, we're not you know, moving and grooving all the time. We're not all speaking, and sometimes it's just about talking to each other rather than talking at each other. And I think that, you know, today allowed for a lot of different emotions to happen. So, you know, you had spaces where people were crying. You had spaces where people were, like, painting kids' nails. And I'm a big fan of diversity of tactics when it comes to organizing, and I think that we undervalue events like this because, you know, we don't think enough about how do we take care of ourselves and our community. We're always thinking about how do we fight for it. And I think the thing that we forget in those moments is sometimes the best way to fight for your community is to love each other and, like, really do something about it. People are getting fed. People are getting resources. People are meeting people. I mean, as a gay person in Madison, I think I've seen every gay person I've ever met in Madison here tonight. It's been a really amazing event to have this kind of community because it's been a really long time since I felt something like this.
Yes, I'm Dina Nina Alder, Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford for District 15 in Madison. It's so important that we come together as a community to heal and talk about it and feel our emotions and support each other after all of this stuff that is happening around this country. And it makes me sick to my stomach that legacy media hasn't been paying attention and covering these things, especially when the Oklahoma senator called a child who was just murdered in a bathroom for being different, calling us filth. Like, I'm angry, I'm shocked, and I shouldn't be. I should not be shocked. And to see so many people that are part of the community, part of the queer community, that are not part of the queer community but are here to support. Like, it's heartening, especially in the face of so much pain that we're facing.
My name is Mercury Stardust, and I'm the trans handy ma'am. I think for a lot of us who are of a certain age, a lot of us remember what it was like back in the 90s when Matthew Shepard was brutally killed. And I think for a lot of us, there is a through line for it. And I think that for a community like Madison, we don't have a lot of trans spaces that we can go to unite and be together. And as sad as it is, I think for a lot of us, it's showing us how much we need this and how much as a trans community we need to be united and stay together to be able to get through. I think that we forget that there's so many of us. I think that sometimes we get into our own community, we are just so hell-bent on surviving. We don't necessarily see all the support and love that we have around us. And to visually see the impact of so many people is overwhelming and quite uplifting. All we can do is just keep on working for each other and making sure we can bring mutual aid to those who need it. We're raising $4 million for trans healthcare for trans people by trans people through Point of Pride, the gender-affirming care access fund that we did last year as well. And today was the very first day of that launch, surprisingly correlating with all of this. So if you can help, please help. But just knowing that it's out there, hopefully that gives a lot of people hope.
This week is Leopold Week in Wisconsin, celebrating the life and legacy of Aldo Leopold, beloved conservationist and author of A Sand County Almanac. On Saturday, community members gathered at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum to kick off the festivities with Madison Reads Leopold, Voices of a Land Ethic. The event featured readings of Leopold's work and others, and WORT reporter Jess Miller was there to listen.
Every first week in March, the state of Wisconsin celebrates Leopold Week, honoring the legacy of the esteemed conservationist, writer, and University of Wisconsin-Madison professor Aldo Leopold with events and demonstrations in the spirit of his land ethic. This past weekend, Leopold Week kicked off at the UW Arboretum, where Leopold served as the first research director, with Madison Reads Leopold, Voices of a Land Ethic. For 3 hours on Saturday afternoon, the community came together to read Leopold's writings aloud, including excerpts from his most celebrated work, A Sand County Almanac, along with the work of other nature writers and poets. To commemorate the 90th anniversary of the dedication of the Arboretum this year, the event began with Leopold's essay, The Arboretum and the University, read by Susan Carpenter, curator of the Arboretum's native plant garden. The essay duplicates the text of a speech which Leopold delivered in June 1934, establishing the Arboretum's mission to recreate an original Wisconsin landscape.
For 20 centuries and longer, all civilized thought has rested upon one basic premise, that it is the destiny of man to exploit and enslave the earth. During the past few decades, however, a new science called ecology has been unobtrusively spreading a film of doubt over this heretofore unchallenged worldview. Plants, animals, men, and soil are a community of interdependent parts, an organism. There is a feeble minority called conservationists who are indignant about something. They are just beginning to realize that their task involves the reorganization of society rather than the passage of some fish and game laws.
Next to the microphone was Arboretum naturalist Kathy Miner, who organized the first Madison Reads Leopold in 2006. Miner read the foreword to A Sand County Almanac. Dated March 4, 1948, it's the reason Leopold Week is celebrated the first week in March. But it was actually the last part of the book Leopold wrote. He died weeks later of a heart attack while fighting a fire on a neighbor's property in Baraboo. It begins, "There are some who can live without wild things, and some who cannot."
These essays are the delights and dilemmas of one who cannot. These wild things, I admit, had little human value until mechanization assured us of a good breakfast, and until science disclosed the drama of where they come from and how they live. That land is a community is the basic concept of ecology, but that land is to be loved and respected is an extension of ethics. That land yields a cultural harvest is a fact long known, but latterly often forgotten. These essays attempt to weld these three concepts.
The day's readers comprised students and professors, scientists and historians, pastors and lawyers, brought together by an interest in conservation or a connection to Leopold's work. One reader with a particularly close connection was Madeline Leopold, a retired attorney and Aldo Leopold's granddaughter. Madeline Leopold dedicated her reading of the essay Goose Music to her aunt, Estella Leopold, the youngest of Leopold's five children, who died last week at age 97.
I have congenital hunting fever and three sons. I hope to leave them good health, an education, and possibly even a competence. But what are they going to do with these things if there be no more deer in the hills? And when the dawn wind stirs through the ancient cottonwoods and the gray light steals down from the hills over the old river sliding softly past its wide brown sandbars, what if there be no more goose music?
Relatively new to the event were readings from authors other than Leopold. Arboretum Community Education Coordinator Maddie Smith took over organizing the event last year in an effort to highlight a variety of relationships with the land and emphasize the relevance of Leopold's message. She and Miner worked to incorporate newer and more diverse authors into the program. Saturday's event featured essays from Potawatomi botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer and the Black author J. Drew Lanham, and eco-poetry by Camille T. Dungy and former U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo. Karen Oberhauser, the former director of the UW Arboretum, read Mary Oliver's poem, What Is It?
Hours ago, the orange sun opened the cups of the lilies, and the leopard frogs began kicking their long muscles, breaststroking like little green dwarves under the roof of the rich iron-colored water. Now, the soft eggs of the salamander in their wrappings of jelly begin to shiver. They're tired of sleep. They have a new idea. They want to swim away into the world.
The afternoon ended with the reading of two of the most quoted essays from A Sand County Almanac. Community member Jonathan Rosenblum read The Outlook.
Quit thinking about decent land use as solely an economic problem. Examine each question in terms of what is ethically and aesthetically right, as well as what is economically expedient. A thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise.
Deb Weitzel, representing the City of Middleton's Sustainability Committee, read from Thinking Like a Mountain.
We all strive for safety, prosperity, comfort, long life, and illness. But too much safety seems to yield only danger in the long run. Perhaps this is behind Thoreau's dictum, "In wildness is the salvation of the world." Perhaps this is the hidden meaning in the howl of the wolf, long known among mountains, but seldom perceived among men.
For WORT News, I'm Jess Miller.
Your time right now is 6:26 p.m., and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. We turn now to two special guests in the studio, Helena White and Faye Parks, who want to tell you a little something about the WORT Winter-ish Pledge Drive.
Yes, we do, don't we, Faye?
We do. So this is Faye Parks here with
Helena White.
And we've got some good news. We heard from Harry.
Thank you so much,
Thank you, Harry.
He called 608-256-2001 and he said his favorite shows are A Public Affair, especially Thursday and Friday, Evening News, the local news, especially Monday, and Labor Radio. Harry is a real news junkie. Maybe you are too. So give us a call at 608-256-2001.
And you can support a community-sponsored radio station. You can get stories like the ones we just heard, which you might not be able to find anywhere else.
Nowhere else.
Yes.
I'm sure that didn't get covered anywhere else like that. Or you can go to WORTFM.org and you can be the first to pledge online for local news. And we have a little bit more time to let you know that we have some different thank you gifts that you can pick up on. As low as $30, you can get a series of three stickers, WORT stickers, bumper stickers for your car or your laptop. Or at the $35 level, you can get the embroidered wart patch, which I'm wearing right now.
Yes, and if you're not a confident sewer, you can also go to the $75 level and get that patch already sewn onto a hat.
Yes, you can. It's a really good one. And then at the $100 level, there's an apple green WORT weekend duffel. So whatever seems to be your cup of tea, give us a call, 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
The time is now 6:32, and you're listening to the local news on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your host, Rachel Fields, here with my co-host, Sam Swartz. Thank you for joining us.
It's Monday night. Do you know where your government is and what it's doing? It's two things you got to know. It's time now for Forward Lookout.
It's Monday, and we're talking to Brenda Conkle about what's happening this week in local government. I'm Faye Parks, filling in for Dylan Brogan, who is unavailable this afternoon. Hi, Brenda.
Hey, Faye.
So I think we'll just have to jump right in here with the county. They've been pretty busy today. So there was a hybrid meeting of the Area Agency on Aging Access, and then the Aging Board met at 3:45. What was on the docket?
They do a lot of reports and a lot of getting updates from various different subcommittees that they have, as well as getting presentations. So the Access Committee was getting a presentation from the Adult Protective Services Victim Advocate. And for the Aging Board, they were going to be looking at inclusive community engagement and outreach and what the board members' roles are there.
Okay, I see. And then for the City of Madison, there was the Equal Opportunities Commission. They started a virtual meeting at 5 that's probably still going. And then the City County Homeless Issues Committee started a meeting at 5:30. Anything to keep an eye on there?
You know, for the Equal Opportunities Commission, that's their executive committee. So they're mostly just setting the agenda for the next meetings. And the Homeless Issues Committee, the big news there is that the community plan to prevent and end homelessness, which the community does every 5 years, just got completed last week. And so this will be sort of the rollout of the official version of it. And so they'll be getting the first peek at it.
Okay, very cool. So moving on to tomorrow, the county's Henry Vallis Zoo Commission has an 8 a.m. meeting with no agenda items. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. There's a couple agendas this week at the county who they had the titles for all the areas, but there was no actual agenda items listed on there. So I don't know if they're just hearing updates and reports or if maybe they're getting some presentations that aren't listed out, but it looked kind of unusual.
Okay, so folks will just have to tune in to see what they're talking about, I guess. That's interesting. And then in Madison, the big news is that the Common Council's Executive Committee is meeting at 4:30, followed by a meeting of the full council at 6:30. So I know the city's budget woes are on the docket there.
You know, it's interesting for the city council's discussion on finances. It always looks really grim in the beginning of the budget season, and this looks grimmer than usual. And then throughout the budget season, as things start getting worked out and people keep coming up with their ideas, it sort of starts to smooth out a little bit. But this is more than usual. It seems like every budget season at the city starts out this way. But I do think that this is extraordinary because of all of the funding our community has been getting because of the COVID funds. And now that those are starting to dry up, sort of a reckoning is going to be happening and trying to figure out where really are our priorities and where are we going to, you know, have to cut back a little bit.
And so I understand that Alder Latimer Burris has proposed going to the state legislature for a sales tax for Madison. I don't know if she's gotten any support from her colleagues, but that's something on the docket. Any thoughts on that?
You know, it's been talked about off and on over the years. It's never been successful. I would be surprised if it would end up being successful this time, if it even gets that far.
Okay, so we'll have to keep an eye on that, I guess. And then on Wednesday, there's a 5:30 meeting of the Board of Health for Madison and Dane County. So what'll they be talking about?
They have a couple of resolutions in front of them, and then they will be talking about forming an ad hoc committee. Doesn't say what committee it is. And then there is, they're getting an update on the PFAS, community engagement, and private well testing.
And so also on Wednesday, at 1 p.m., the city's Homeless Services Consortium Board of Directors has a virtual meeting. What's on their docket?
They're doing a little bit of administrative items, and then they also will be taking a look at that plan, getting the official version of the community plan to prevent and end homelessness. And they will also be talking about, we have something called coordinated entry in the homeless services system, and that determines who has the highest needs to make sure they're getting services first. And they're talking about reimagining that. And so they'll be getting some details about that.
And so later on that evening, Wednesday at 6 p.m., there's a meeting of the Police Civilian Oversight Board, specifically their Community Engagement Subcommittee. Any thoughts on that?
So they'll be talking about rescheduling their community listening sessions, and then also talking about how to make sure that they have Spanish language community listening sessions, and talking about their social media presence. Sometimes these agendas, I can't find them, and I was able to find them today, so that's good. It seems like they're making a bigger effort to make sure it's accessible to the public.
And so moving on to Thursday, the county's library board is meeting at noon, and then the county board's executive committee has a hybrid meeting at 5:30, followed by a full board meeting at 7. Any thoughts on those meetings?
Library board is mostly reports again. Executive committee is going to be looking at Chapter 7 is the rules that govern how the county board does its business. And once every 2 years, they look at those rules. So they'll be looking at those, as well as they have a couple of resolutions. One would be urging the resignation of Commissioner Bob Spindell from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And then they are also reconstituting the Dane County Broadband Task Force.
Yeah. So I guess they're getting involved in national politics a little there, state politics. So that's fun.
Yes. It looks like they're also going to be looking at conditional uses and rezoning. And so if people are interested in county zoning, that may be of interest to them. Chapter 10 is going to be amended. And then there's a long list of things that were in some of the previous meetings that we talked about already.
Okay. And I think finally, also on Thursday, the city's Community Development Block Grant Committee is meeting at 5:30 at the municipal building only. I'm not seeing any virtual options for that. So is there any reason folks might want to show up to the building itself and hear what's happening?
They are having a public hearing on their 2024 action plan, and that is an area where it's really big picture, high level kind of stuff. But if you want to impact where the city's CDBG money and federal government money goes to, what the priorities are, that is the time to give input on that. They also will be getting a report on the 5-year plan to prevent and end homelessness.
Brenda Conkle, everybody. If you want to see this week's meeting agendas for Dane County and Madison, just head to forwardlookout.com. Brenda, we appreciate you taking the time to walk us through this week's calendar.
No problem. Thanks so much.
A 106 years ago today, the U.S. outbreak of the Great Flu pandemic began in Fort Riley, Kansas. The so-called Spanish flu killed at least 50 million people, and perhaps as many as 100 million. Historians of the time say government lies exacerbated the pandemic. Feature contributor Harry Richardson has the story.
For Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. For our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. For the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. For the Union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
Today, March 4th, is the anniversary of the beginning of the great flu pandemic of 1918 in Fort Riley, Kansas. The so-called Spanish flu likely killed at least 50 million people, perhaps as many as 100 million people worldwide, making it perhaps the deadliest pandemic in world history. It spread so widely and quickly because of the war effort. Though the exact origin of the virus is hard to document, it likely originated in nearby Haskell County, Kansas, where the first usually mild but very widespread cases were reported by the local doctor. The local paper noted several military trainees returned to camp after visiting family. A few days later, the camp hospital began receiving soldiers with influenza on March 4th. After 3 weeks, 1,100 troops required hospitalization. Many troops moved back and forth among the various training camps, and the disease spread quickly. 24 of the 36 largest army camps had influenza outbreaks that spring. 30 of the 50 largest cities in the country, most of them near military bases, also suffered an April spike in excess mortality. The first outbreaks in Europe occurred in Brest, France, in early April, when American troops disembarked. An entire French military command was suddenly crippled. From Brest, the disease spread to French, British, and Italian troops. In May, the British First Army alone suffered 36,000 hospitalized and tens of thousands of less serious cases. There was similar widespread effects among German troops, where it perhaps delayed a key planned German offensive. With wartime censorship, French, German, and British papers printed nothing negative, nothing that would hurt morale. Spain, however, was neutral in the war, and in May started getting many cases of influenza. Papers were filled with reports, especially when the king, Alphonse II, fell seriously ill. So the disease soon became known as the Spanish flu, because Spain was the only major country reporting the effects. The first wave killed relatively few people, but the second and subsequent waves were lethal. The main lesson of the 1918 pandemic, says historian John M. Barry, is that the governments lied. They lied about everything. We were at war, and they lied because they didn't want to upend the war effort. But people quickly figured it out. When neighbors started dying 24 hours after symptoms first appeared, this created a disaster. People lost faith in everything, in their government, in what they were being told, in each other. If trust collapses, then it is everyone for themselves. And by the time the government was forced to be transparent about the situation, it was mostly too late. Barry quoted a scientist at the time who said, "We were a few weeks away from civilization disappearing from the face of the earth." In 1918, many cities imposed restrictions, closed schools, bars, and theaters, banned public events, urged social distancing, mask wearing, and issued stay-at-home orders. These measures were effective in flattening the curve, but often cities lifted the restrictions too soon, then reimposed them. The most important lesson of 1918 is to tell the truth. And that is our story for today. For the past in the past, I'm Harry Richardson.
We turn now to two special guests in the studio, Helena White and Faye Parks, who want to tell you a little something about the WORT Winter Pledge Drive.
Yes, tell the truth, right? The best thing to do is to tell the truth, and that's what we do right here at WORT.
It is, and this is Faye Parks here with
Helena White.
And unfortunately, we have nothing to report since we talked to you last.
No, we got a call from Harry. He called 608-256-2001. And last hour, we heard from Lauren, and she went to WORTFM.org, but nobody else has called since. But I know that I can trust you guys to go to the phone. You may think somebody else is going to give us a call and make a pledge, but actually, only 1 out of 10 listeners really actually makes donations to the radio station. That's only 1 in 10.
Yeah, and knowing that, it is so easy for you to join a special exclusive club. All you have to do is pick up the phone, call 608-256-2001, and you can talk to Ken, our friend Ken, outside, or you can go to WORTFM.org. We'd really love to hear from you.
And if you've never done it before, let me assure you, it's very simple. We just get your information, you know, your address and how much you'd like to donate. And we find out what your favorite shows are. You can send any special messages to us about how much you love WORT. And if you've never donated before, now is the perfect time to do it. And it'll make you feel so good. You'll become part of the WORT family. And you'll know that your contribution, no matter how small or how large, is helping to make this great station keep going.
Yeah, and it's a really a special community to be part of. You know, this story that I worked on today, most of the work, I would say probably 95% of it, came from Christina Kivlin, who is in our Her Turn Collective. They put on a show every Sunday for a half hour at 11 a.m. It's our feminist news show. And so she actually went to this vigil on Friday, got all of that audio, spoke to all of those wonderful people, heard directly from the folks attending that vigil for Next Benedict. And I was the one who just stitched it together. So it was just part of my job, making sure the show was ready to go. But you can join this family, you know, either by volunteering or, of course, by helping us with financial support to make these things happen, because we're all here to work together.
And I thought that was a very moving segment when we heard from all those people. I mean, transgender people are under attack in the United States right now. And legislations all around the country are trying to pass laws and have been passing laws to try and trample on transgender rights. And so if you feel strongly about that, then please give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org. Let us know how much you appreciate the local news that we're bringing to you. There is no other station on the radio dial that brings you 1 hour of local news for 4 nights a week.
Yes, that is a totally unique thing here at WRT, and it is something we do without commercials, without corporate sponsorships. It is fully from community support.
It's an independent news organization. Nobody is telling us what to cover or what we can or cannot cover, and that's because we turn to you to get our support. It's you who provide us with the money that lets us keep going with this radio station. So that's why it's your turn to give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org. Be the first to pledge online, especially if you've never pledged before. I'd love to hear from a first-time pledger, and I would love to hear from somebody who wants to donate on a monthly basis, a minimum of $5. That's 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
And now, back to the news.
This week on Madison Mixology, reporter Charlie Bielowski teaches us about a classic American cocktail, the screwdriver. Charlie will tell us how to make the cocktail at home and share the drink's 1940s era backstory.
Welcome back to Madison Mixology. I'm your host and favorite reporter, Charlie Bielowski. This week, I have a commonly known drink with a rich history behind it, the screwdriver. This drink is an American classic and sees its conception somewhere around China or Turkey during World War II. American servicemen abroad in these areas found themselves lacking familiar American spirits like whiskey, and as a result, took to cutting more neutral spirits and Turkish vodka with orange juice to make it more palatable. As the war ended and these servicemen brought their new creation back to the States, vodka brands such as Smirnoff began to take notice, and, hoping to get a foothold in the American market, began using the screwdriver in their marketing campaigns. Their strategy worked handily, and in the 50s and 60s, the popularity of vodka in the US rose significantly. Making this drink is simple. Start off with your glass and ice, and add about 1.5 to 2 ounces of any sort of vodka you like. Smirnoff is most popularly known, but with me today I have Tito's. After that, top it off the rest of the way with orange juice, and give it a stir. After that, it's ready for consumption. Time to give it a try. I mean, it's spiked orange juice, what else can I say? It's definitely more of a morning drink, like a Bloody Mary. If, you know, you're at some sort of like fancy event, you're gonna get something like this, or like I said, a Bloody Mary. Very citrusy. Refreshing, like both the other ones that I've tried so far. It's very colorful too, I might add. But other than that, it's very just middle of the road for me. As I've said in past broadcasts, rum is my go-to drink usually, which is why grog has probably been one of my favorites. But the screwdriver is definitely a classic. And if you don't know what else to get when you're at a bar, a screwdriver can, you know, you can never go wrong with a screwdriver, so. The origin of the name screwdriver is shrouded in mystery, and most accounts of the name are unattributed. One popular story suggests that factory workers who lacked spoons to mix their drinks instead used screwdrivers they had available, while another story says it was auto workers who mixed vodka in their morning orange juice and used their tools to mix it. Most of these accounts have little evidence supporting them, however. Like the 7-and-7, there are a number of variants to the screwdriver that have been created since its conception in the 1940s. Some examples include the mimosa, which uses sparkling wine instead of vodka and has become a popular breakfast drink. Same with the screwdriver or the Bloody Mary. There's the fuzzy navel, which uses peach schnapps in place of vodka and makes for a much fruitier cocktail. Or the Harvey Wallbanger, which adds a float of Italian liqueur to the regular screwdriver. Try some of these combos for yourself or stick to the original. And that's it for today's segment. I'm your host, Charlie Bielowski, and I'll see you next week for another installment of Madison Mixology.
Today, feature contributor Harry Richardson reviews a new action-adventure movie, Argyle. Harry says the spy comedy is not so good.
Oh my god, you're Ellie freaking Conway.
Author of the Argyle series, Ellie Conway!
I am such a fan!
Oh yeah? What is it you do?
Espionage.
Would you
sign my book?
That was clip from the trailer for Argyle, directed by Matthew Vaughn, from a script by Jason Fuchs. This movie has a great trailer, but then the reviews came in. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 33%. Audience, 72%. This time I come down closer to the critics. This is sort of half of a good movie. The film has a funny action premise, combined with an A-list cast, that is sadly sunk by an overly complex, twisty story. The story goes too far halfway through. Our opening is fun and promising, with an extremely successful spy novel writer, Ellie Conway, Bryce Dallas Howard of the Jurassic World series. Ellie is reading from her book before some adoring fans. She returns home contentedly to her cat, Alfie, and her computer. True to her word at the book signing, she concludes book 5. We see her imagination playing out the closing scene with Henry Cavill and John Cena as two spies trying to grab the master key to expose the division, a group of bad guy spies. She calls her mom, Catherine O'Hara, to ask if she liked the book. Her mom says the ending is a cop-out. Ellie insists it's a cliffhanger. Mom offers to visit to help her with the ending, but Ellie decides to go there by train. She's afraid of flying. But on her trip, she meets a scruffy-looking Aiden, Sam Rockwell, and our story takes off. Aiden is reading her latest book and gushes about how much he loves her books. Uncomfortably, she asks, "What do you do?" He replies, "I'm in the espionage," and proceeds to save her from several would-be assassins. He explains, "I'm with the good guys, trust me. There are people who want to kidnap you and make you finish that next story because your novels have been predicting real-world spying events." She's shocked and disbelieving, but has little choice but to let Aiden save her. A pretty imaginative, fun premise that wears out about halfway through. Sadly, I can't recommend this movie, now playing in local theaters. Next week, post-Pledge Drive, I hope to review Dune 2, the long-awaited sequel to the 2021 great sci-fi film based on the beloved book series by Frank Herbert. The first movie seemed to keep fairly close to the first half of Book 1. The second, a well-done action-adventure film with an A-list cast, keeps fairly close to the second half of the book. Part 2 recognized the problematic white savior aspect of the series, but continued to stray from Herbert's original allusions to Arabic and Middle Eastern peoples and their religious cultural traditions. I also hope to discuss a new documentary, American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders, about the mysterious 1991 death of U.S. journalist Danny Casolaro. For WRT's Monday Movie Review, I'm Harry Richardson.
We've come nearly to the end of another hour of handcrafted local news here on WORT. Our guests this evening, Helena White and Faye Parks, have one last word this evening, and hopefully some people to thank. What's the news, Helena and Faye?
Well, actually,
no real news, unfortunately.
We do thank Harry for giving us a call at 608-256-2001, and that's been great. Mm-hmm. And earlier, Lauren went to WORTFM.org, and she pledged online for Democracy Now! But otherwise, it's been fairly quiet out there, so we really need you guys to step up, please.
Yeah, you guys are letting Ken probably take a nap out there.
I'm afraid so.
I'm sure he's happy, but we'd love for you guys to talk to him. Just tell him some of your favorite shows. We love reading those comments on the air. Or if you'd rather, you can go to our website at WORTFM.org.
And you can write comments about your favorite shows there, too. I want to let you know that it costs $80 an hour for us to run this radio station, and it runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's a lot of money. In the time that I've been sitting here doing pledge wrapping with you, Faye, we've gone through $160.
Yeah. It takes money to run this place. And that's the bare minimum, of course. There are always things looking ahead to the future that we would love. You know, we you know, our roof probably isn't the most trustworthy at this point. So keep the roof over our heads for one thing. And for another, just day-to-day thing, specifically in my experience as producer for the local news, we can always use really nice recorders that can make a huge difference in the field. If you're either going to a press conference or you're going to a protest and there's a lot of wind, being able to get good sound quality, it makes your experience better when you're listening. That's something we want to bring to you, but we need the resources to do it.
And I would just like to say how much I appreciate you stepping in, Faye, and being our assistant news director here.
Thank you, Helena.
You've done a fantastic job, and the local news is just such a, it's such a pride and joy to me that WORT has 4 days a week. We have an hour-long local news. There's nowhere else on the radio dial that you're going to get this level of in-depth coverage of local community information. The piece, the visual that we heard, the people talking about the visual today, people saying that they, the youth saying that they want to meet elderly trans people because they want to know that they do live that long, that they don't all get killed. I mean, that's very incredible to be able to hear that kind of information. And where else can you hear that except for on WORT?
Yeah, it's really important. It's really special that we get to get those stories out, to actually hear from folks on the ground, living, going to these events, and just really hear how their experience going through the world. And of course, from my experience too, WORT is really special because it's sort of a breeding ground for folks who want to get into journalism. You know, I got started here pretty soon after I graduated from college, and they taught me everything I know. And that goes for every other reporter who works for us, who volunteers for us. They're learning skills that you just can't really get in the classroom.
And we've had other reporters who've come through as volunteers, as high school students, and now they're at UW Minnesota doing journalism. And our own Sam Swartz, who's reading the news tonight, he's now a journalism major, which is very exciting. And he started volunteering to read the news with me when he was in high school. And that was, I mean, that's just fantastic. It's a, this WORT, it's a resource for you where you get your information. It's a place you can come and get training in how to be a journalist. It's a place where you can have a chance to play music on the radio. It's just a fantastic resource. We know how much you appreciate it. So show us that appreciation, please, by giving us a call at 608-256-2001 or going to wortfm.org.
Yeah, it would make a huge difference for us here. We can take all of the support that you can give. Of course, we love having volunteers too. We're always looking for new reporters on the local news. Whatever matters to you in whatever way that you can help, whatever resources you have, it makes a difference for us.
And it is a great radio station. We know how much you love it. You could give us a call at 608-256-2001 and you could pledge for the Wart Cross Body Bag at the $65 level or this really handsome apple green wart duffel, weekend duffel bag at the $100 level, or a pair of binoculars at the $120 level. You could donate on a monthly basis, a minimum of $5 a month, $5, $10, $15 a month. It may not be too much for your budget. You might be able to fit that into your budget. Over time, you're quickly giving us quite a bit of money. So please give us a call at 608-256-2001 or wortfm.org. Thank you very much.
Keep those calls coming and fund this phenomenal local journalism program and this little journalist's dreams at 608-256-2001. That's 608-256-2001. Keep those web donations coming too at wortfm.org/donate. And thanks for supporting the WORT live local news at 6. Your headline writer this evening was Nate Carlin. Your reporters were Jess Miller and Christina Kivlin. Special thanks to feature contributors Brenda Conkle, Charlie Bielowski, and Harry Richardson. And thanks to Nicholas Leet for technical production and Bill Kingsbury for web production. Engineer Victor Calzoni got the news on the air tonight. Faye Parks produced this newscast, and Sholly Pittman is the news director at WORT. I'm your host, Sam Swartz.
And I'm your host, Rachel Fields. Up next is the most freeform show on the radio dial, The Access Hour. Coming up after these announcements. Good night.